So we're here with the venerable Caleb Quambeck.
I'm here.
You're here.
You're here.
I'm here.
I was here first, and I'm so glad that you guys came out.
Well, I'm happy that you let us come out. Happy that you made it all the way up to this neck of the woods. I wish it was a little bit warmer, especially since we're outside doing this. But yeah. It's gotten warmer since this morning.
Yeah. No, it's huge. I mean, we got blue skies.
Yeah.
It was calling for rain last week when we were planning this trip.
Right.
And so I'm very grateful. I'll take, 35, 40-degree weather. And a little bit of cold.
Yeah.
I don't make it up to this part of the country very often. If I'm here, it's for FD, and it's so crazy.
Yeah.
Because I'm usually working. I'm usually filming.
Right. You also come in a month where it's hot.
Yeah, it's miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been to the English Town. That's where we're at, by the way.
Yeah.
We're at English Town. And I've been here a bunch. This is my first time driving, and we have the track to ourselves.
Which is wild.
It's pretty crazy to see it like this. We're filming a podcast. We're on the track.
Yeah.
Right now.
Right. Yeah, like LZ and the whole group of those LZ friends.
Yeah.
They were just here last weekend.
Yeah, the world tour.
Yeah.
And we kind of planned it around that to make sure that there was time and space available for us to come in. And when you have a setting like this, sure, we love events because we like driving with our friends, we like spectators, we like putting on a show and entertaining, but
yeah.
Doing something like this allows us to stockpile some content to start the year,
yeah.
Allows us to, have a pretty relaxed environment to just chit-chat, catch up.
Stuff cars about, in the mud.
Were we going to talk about that?
Well, I don't know.
So
I don't really have a lot of rules for our podcast.
So we filmed a video earlier going over my car so you guys kind of get an in-depth look at it.
Yeah, and that'll be out at some point.
So at some point in that video, we
right.
mentioned Scott
right.
should drive my car.
Which was a bad idea to start with.
No. So he has a sim, so he's drifted.
That doesn't count.
I said we should see if it translates over. So we threw him in a car,
yeah.
Got a quick change, a dog box, 600 horsepower, and you, to be fair, like just taking off, just getting in the car and driving it. That was looked very, so natural.
Yeah.
You know?
The car is easy to drive.
It is. And then it's just the mechanics of, like, knowing that you can pull a hydraulic handbrake harder.
Harder than the sim, yeah.
The sim one.
Because the sim, right, and it's true. It's like, it took me, like, I don't know why that didn't resonate, because, like, it's not like I'm a stranger to cars, but, like,
no.
But it really is one of those things. Like, you have to, it's, you get used to just flicking that thing,
yeah.
Right? But, like, with, when you're using a regular hydraulic handbrake, you really, if you want to lock them up, you got to like really bear down on that thing.
Pull it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say it would, you work the foot brake in your sim.
Yeah.
So that's a lot easier than slowing down a real car when there's weight behind it.
Yeah. And there's also, right. There's also, a lot of times you're picking these cars up and like you feel like they put good brakes on it in the game.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't cost money.
No.
And the brakes are good, but like you don't use a rear brake. Because you have the hydro.
Yeah, well, it's not what you would call a suicide brake. So there's still a foot brake. The foot brake still works the rear calipers as well, but
okay.
Our bias
got you
is
got
adjusted
you.
Very front heavy.
Right.
So I saw one time when you were coming off track a little hot.
Yeah.
You just jabbed the foot brake and
yeah.
The front's locked up.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just because of the bias.
Right.
And we run an inline handbrake, so there isn't a separate set of calipers for the handbrake.
Yeah.
And which means you. I wouldn't say you have to pull it harder. It's probably about the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just it's a learning curve. If you spent 2 or 3 hours out here at a one of Chris Knapp's
yeah
schools
in
the school, you were fine. I mean, you guys. I hope you see the footage of Scott driving.
Try not to show you the bad stuff.
Just the good stuff. But towards the end there, he was running the correct line. He was pushing wide, using a ton of the angle. And
yeah.
I think you should be proud of it.
Well, listen,
you did get my car dirty.
In the last,
this camera might be able to see it.
It was we wanted to make sure that we saw how wet the mud actually was
and how soft. Yeah,
and I think we did. So that was
yeah.
Check one.
No,
but
it wasn't bad.
Like, well, first off, I appreciate you letting me. Let me take a stab at it. That was cool.
Dude, I would let you do that all day long.
I know. And I just think it's safer for everybody if we just don't. But I will tell you, because I think this is my biggest takeaway for anybody that maybe has had a sim experience, right?
Yeah.
But never actually been in something, especially something that has, like, as much kind of cojones as your car has, right?
It's pretty gripped up, too, which doesn't make it as easy to drive.
But you got to drive with commitment.
You do. If you had a car that was a little bit looser, yeah, when you were entering, the car would have floated more.
I don't know if I would have liked it, though. I kind of enjoyed the grip in a weird way. Because when you get it, you feel like you have all the control in every direction.
And you do.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
But yeah.
Like you said, there's so much more commitment involved with, yeah, driving a car that's got a lot of grip dialed into it versus a super loose setup.
100%.
The loose setup's going to be way easier just to get it to go sideways.
Right.
But once you're sideways, the amount of control and drive you have to get you away from things and,
yeah,
and whatnot, that kind of goes out the window because the car's so loose.
It's interesting. It's like when we started like getting in the car, I think, you know, when I had gotten out of the car, Max had asked me like, you know, like, so how does it compare to the sim? And I'm like, you know, it's interesting. It's like the car itself requires less effort.
Yeah.
But No, it requires less work, but it takes more effort to drive, right? Yeah. Like, because the focus, where you're pulling things, like the amount of commitment that you're making on it, like you got to be dialed. You got to know where you're going. You got to really trust that you are in the right spot. And that really is that's an experience thing. You got to hit it over and over again to really feel that.
And I think that the other thing is that the car, there's an actual risk when you,
yeah,
pull that handbrake.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
In the sim, you can try 1,000 different things and you can crash into the wall and blow off track and,
right,
there's no repercussions. You just reset.
Yep.
And with this, like, you were talking about picking your points and,
yeah,
where to enter and when to grab the handbrake and when to counter steer and all these little things, if not done correctly, there's a risk. And sure, it's just a mud right now.
Right now.
That was our risk, yeah, right now, which is fine. But yeah, there's, you know, it's a lot more money. And
yeah,
I think that the sim does help, and I think it's a – I've never driven a sim. Just to be fair, I've never once ever drifted a sim.
Yeah.
I've wanted to,
yeah,
but my car costs too much money. I
That's right.
That's right. It's a good real life.
So I had to, right, I'm just going to do it in real life. I mean, you, yeah, know. So
I think I come from a generation, too, where it's just a little bit different, right? Like, we didn't have that.
Yeah.
So – and I've talked to other people, like – who was it? Maybe it was Turk. I can't remember. I was talking to somebody who's, like, my age, and it was like – can't do it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't click.
So what's interesting to me is, like, I was always into cars and driving, and I had never – I'm not a gamer.
Yeah.
I don't play video games. Like, I don't – it bothers me to play video games because I feel like I'm wasting my time. I have other things I got to do.
Yeah.
Right? But I think the thing for me is, as I get older and I have kids and I do all this stuff, I'm not able to go to a track anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not able to do anything. And I think there's a real – there was a hard, like, depression that hit when I felt like, well, I'm never going to be able to go to the track again. Now, that doesn't mean that that will really happen, but, like, yeah, you know, to be able to do things. And so what was fun to me was the idea, watching so many of some of the pro drivers, you know, use a sim as a training tool, the idea that maybe this could fill a little bit of the void of not being able to be on the track, right?
Yeah.
And it does. But I don't drive it that much because I find it still to be a little bit too much in the video game world. But what's interesting, though, is, you know, for somebody that, like, obviously I've had some sim time, not a lot, yeah, but
and
some.
You've had some real track time, like you've driven on
cars.
Track.
Cars.
Yeah, yeah, real cars.
Right? Because that's yeah, what I, right.
Do you feel like it kind of just keeps you sharp? Like, maybe you'll get less track days because you're so busy.
Yeah.
Right? So, but when you do go to the track, you've found a tool to kind of help yourself stay sharp enough to kind of pick up where you left off. Maybe not with drifting.
I don't.
Because you've never, yeah, done drifting.
Right.
Really. But, like, just with track driving in general.
I think, you know what I think, like, especially with cars and racing and stuff like that, there's a lot of muscle memory that has to go into that stuff,
yeah,
to the point where you feel confidence and you feel that comfort level of being able to navigate the car, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't, you know, it's probably the equivalent of photography, right? Like, for those that are into photography, like, you don't show up to go shoot a wedding and then that's the day you try to figure out how to work your camera.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you need to know your camera because then when you could think about, oh, it'd be cool, you know, I can get a lot more bokeh, if, you know, if I set up this,
yeah,
way and I do this. And, like, and so you can't, so when you get there, if working the car and your adjustments and what you do is, you know, involuntary, then you can keep your mind on doing other things. And I think that that's what it is. Like, when you go to, like, tracks and you have the ability to practice on a track, you know, you get there, you're not thinking about what line should I take. You can do that in the sim.
Yeah.
What you can't do is you can't, you know, and again, this is obviously the first time I've been behind the wheel in a drift car,
yeah,
right?
Real one.
And And I think that there's a lot more gravity to driving it, you know, in person, and also something that's not yours. I mean, there is a little bit of that.
Yeah, but you don't have to.
No, I know, but still.
The one thing with the Sim that I've thought about was whenever I go to a new track, like E-Town, I've been here a bunch, but I've never driven it.
Right.
It took me two sets of tires to just really understand how the track works. That doesn't even mean, I'm not even talking about like dialing in the track and knowing, getting the perfect line. That took much more. So I'm wasting, I don't want to say wasting, but kind of. I'm wasting tires.
Money. And money.
And money. Money. You know, I'm wasting tires, fuel, all that. Just to learn the track. Now, if I had 10 laps on the Sim around E-Town, I would know where the corners are at. I would have a rough idea.
Yeah.
And the track walk, which we all do when we come to a new track, it doesn't do it the same. It doesn't do the same thing because you're on your feet. It's hard to judge your points of entry or transition. It's just that it's different. So I always think about the Sim as it's a great tool to
know the lay of the land.
Learn a new track. And this is not just for here. This is any time I go to a new track. I've never seen it before. Half the time, the track's so long, you can't even see the other side. So you're driving around. You may drift a couple corners, and you're like, okay, well, I need to go way faster there.
Right.
You know, and that wastes time and money and tires. And
so yeah.
The Sim, I think, for that
is fantastic.
A fantastic tool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that – I do think the one thing that does translate – and I don't know, obviously, back here because, like, I don't think I've ever driven – I don't think I've ever been even in the Sim on this part of the road track for E-Town. But, like, I do think the one thing that translates is the visual pickups. You know, like where you know, that where to initiate type thing. But like as far as getting that pick of like how, you know, how much throttle you use or how long you hold a handbrake or anything like that, you can't do that. I don't think that translates as well. But I think that that's something that if you when you're into cars, like your body picks up on that part very quickly.
Well, because you can feel everything too. You can feel the weight transfer of the car when it gets sideways.
Yeah.
You can feel the side, you know, load up. You can feel all. You can feel the weight of the car pushing you forward. The momentum, like you pull the handbrake and the weight of the car is keeping that momentum up a little bit. Obviously, you're slowing down too. But it's, I think the Sim for me, not being able to feel the car.
Yeah, that is tough.
Would be a hard learn for me. What do you think about like if we went for a ride after your driving?
Yeah.
And you mentioned to me, we kind of talked about this already, but just for the viewers.
Yeah.
You know. What's the main differences from what you felt while driving and then just riding passenger?
Sitting in the passenger seat, you trying to basically do the same portion of the course. Yeah, so like I think that the biggest takeaway for me is you obviously come in with a lot more commitment. And a lot of your moves are done earlier than mine, but because you're coming in with such commitment, you have that lot more speed. And so what you're able to do, and you're like, when you're on throttle, you're way more on throttle. And I think that commitment factor really changes like exactly how that car initiates. But also, like, you know, the one thing I think you really showed me today, especially when we went around the different part of the track, is that, you know, that game plan is something you got to get your mind in shape for, to be able to constantly say, like, you constantly are thinking when you're moving the car, all right, I'm a little shallow here, I got to do this, where's the compensation coming from?
And
make a plan. Yeah, right, that plan. And so that is pretty important. I mean, it's very important, but like...
Well, you talked about picking your points, you know, in the Sim driving.
Yep.
Excuse me.
Yeah, you're good.
It's kind of the same thing, right? Like, I use wherever you're looking with your eyes.
Yeah, that's where you're going.
That's where you're going.
Yeah.
And that hurts a lot of people. You know, you're scared of the wall, you're staring at it, and all of a sudden you're in it.
Right. Yeah.
That happens a lot. But you're using, you know, you're looking ahead. You're never looking right where the car is at. You're looking ahead, okay, I need the back of the car over there because that's going to line me up. Now I'm looking over here, it's going to line me up. I'm going to go up this hill.
Yeah.
And so you're just doing that throughout the whole track. And that's if all is well. Now, at certain points in your lap, you might make a mistake, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, come in a little shallow or a little deep. But what do I got to do now? Now my plan's screwed up. Now I'm making a new plan. I got to fix this so I can get to X, and then that'll get me to Y.
Yeah.
And, you're just problem solving and building a plan
the
whole lap.
Yeah.
You know, and that goes for even, you know, tracks that you're super familiar with and you know, like, the back of your hand. That problem solving and that plan that you're building that never stops.
Let me ask you a question. From the, so, like, you've had such a longer progression in drifting, whatever. But as you kind of think back to maybe some of your earlier days where your skill level wasn't as significant as maybe it is now, like, do you feel that, you know, how you approach kind of entering, you know, entering turns and or you know, entering corners and kind of how you set the car up to initiate, do you think any of that stuff has really changed? Like, do you use your eyes more now than maybe you did before? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Is there anything there?
Yeah, I think that over time and the evolution and the growth of drifting, certain things have kind of phased out, like certain techniques even. And some things aren't as cool as, you know, this other thing. Like, I remember when it was like fuse to handbrake, it was like you were the worst person on that. There's still guys at the handbrake.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is, the handbrake is a tool, right? And like today, we weren't making you do a big faint Scandinavian flick entry.
No, that would have been a bad
idea. Why would you do that?
Right.
Like, you're
right.
Learning, right?
Right.
And so you're gonna drag the handbrake, you're gonna set the angle, and you're gonna light off and go.
Right.
And the commitment that you talked about is probably the thing that gets gnarlier as you progress.
Yeah.
So I, you know, when I first started drifting, sure, I could do a little flick in.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I was going slow.
Right.
It wasn't aggressive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of that builds with your confidence. And sometimes, you know, I watch old videos of me doing stuff and I'm like, I had no business doing that, but I didn't know any better.
Right.
You know, you're doing things, you could say, you know, trying to run a wall. Okay. Trying to run a wall. And I didn't actually know the proper technique to do that.
Yeah.
I was just going for it.
Right.
And then it takes crashing and you figure it out. But
right.
It's all a learning curve. I would say that the problem solving and the making a plan came with age more so.
But experience too, right?
Experience, but like, I don't know. I just feel like I'm less it's like less chaos. I don't know how to
explain. Like you're more calculated.
Yeah, I'm just more calculated. I just think about it a little bit more. I spend more time. When you're younger, you have an ego.
Okay.
And you don't want to ask for help.
Right.
Right? You don't want to be wrong. You don't want to ask for help. You're just, what's your way or the highway type of thing. And like, I would say that asking people for help is huge. We're just talking about what's changed over time. I spent time today with the owner of the track just, you know, driving around.
Yeah. Shout out to Chris Knapp,
by the way.
Shout out
to Chris Knapp. Asking him about certain sections of the track instead of just wasting tires, right? And not thinking about it, just going and trying to figure it out. Like, I hadn't talked to him for 5 minutes. The last five laps were exactly what I should have been doing, right? So maybe there's a lot of stuff that's changed. It's not so much in the car. It's more in preparation to be on track. I think about it more beforehand. And then... yeah, the commitment levels increase with time and laps on track. It's kind of a mixture of both, I think.
Yeah. So real quick, you know, one of the things I think that's kind of new for you this year, and one of the things I wanted to kind of wrap with you about is like, by the time this comes out, your release will have been done. Yeah. So this year. Last year, for people that follow along, you obviously were supported by Walther.
Yeah.
And Walther obviously being a firearms company. And I think I have a couple questions about that because I think there's some interesting pieces there.
Yeah.
But this year you are bringing Jackson Mead into the picture.
Yeah.
And now you guys are going to run a dual Walther E46 program.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's exciting, but also I'm sure anybody that's ever, it's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that I have, you know, help from Uncle Mo. I got help from Jackson. I couldn't do it by myself.
I know that.
And I can barely do it with the squad that we have. But a little backstory on Jackson even is, you know, when I moved to Richmond, Kentucky, and I was not drifting at the time, and I met this kid. He was my neighbor, and he was drifting, and it's Jackson.
Yeah.
And we spent a little bit of time together, and he just would always encourage me to get back into it. Just get something, you know, and we'll build it together, and just take your time and whatever. And so without him motivating me to get back in, I don't know if I definitely wouldn't be where I am today.
Right.
So as I built my car last year, things were going a little rough last year. And then the opportunity popped up this year that Walther wanted two cars.
Yeah.
And it was a no-brainer.
Like, yeah.
Jackson was the guy. You got to have somebody you can trust.
Right.
You know, somebody you can trust, somebody you can trust around your family.
Yep.
You know, somebody who's respectful, you know, all those things are so important. I can't, you know, the only other person I would do it with is Travis.
Yeah.
He's too expensive.
Travis, you got to drop your price, man. Drop your price.
And so, yeah, we just dove into it. We had a car already. We had a chassis that was already caged. And it was just a bare shell.
Yeah.
Not even didn't have subframes. It was just a cage shell.
Right.
And we built it over the last 3 months. And one thing about Jackson, I mean, he's new to this whole being sponsored thing. Like,
yeah,
that's new for Jackson. But he is respectful and he can wheel.
Yeah.
Like, he can drive.
Yeah.
Like, you sponsor Cole Richards? Is that a thing?
We did. I think.
Well, I watched Jackson push him around the track in a 180 horsepower car.
Yeah.
In a finals in the competition.
That's pretty wild.
It was insane.
Yeah.
So the dude can wheel. He's a nice guy. He's one of my best friends. And yeah, I'm happy to have him. And we're just getting started.
Yeah.
This is the first outing with that car. And we've had a couple little teething things, but nothing bad.
Yeah.
And then my car, we've just put fuel in it.
Yep.
And Kenda's.
Yeah. Right. And we're off when we're off.
We were off, yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, what I love, first off, I love the fact that, like, you found an unconventional way to do what you love, but also a way to blur two of probably the biggest passions you have together, right? Being able, you know, you're really big for people to follow your content. You're really big into firearm safety, firearm training, and, you know, and obviously, you know, shooting and guns and, you know, and I want to make sure that I'm like, I state this like clearly, like, this is not about like, listen, however you feel about a Second Amendment, however you feel about, you know, gun things. The one thing that, you know, that really shines here is both Walter and you have a strong position on gun safety and advocating for proper gun use and education.
Yeah.
Right?
Training.
Right. 100%. Yeah. And so this is not a lawless thing, but yeah, for a company like Walter to come in and say and look at you and say, hey, we're going to try this whole thing in automotive too, and then to do it for a year and realize, man, this is a community that really really works with you know, kind of our company as well.
Yeah.
And to see the value in it. Just to see the value in it. Like, man, there's so much, you know, automotive, everybody will know that we're a really tight-knit community, right? As big as automotive enthusiasm is, tight-knit community, anywhere I go in the country, in the world, if I'm with another car person, whether they speak the same language or not, we can vibe.
Yeah.
We can vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny when you take that one aspect that you take out, your common interest, which is the cars.
Yeah.
You're like, I probably wouldn't hang out with this guy.
Ever. Yeah.
But you're like, we both like this one thing.
Right.
And that brings us, now we're tight.
Right.
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I've thought about that before.
Yeah. And so I think that's what bonds me to, you know, the automotive industry more and more and more. Mm-hmm. Because I realize, like, the more you meet, listen, in every industry, there's always going to be that person that you're like, man, I wish this guy would run away and never come back. Right.
Yeah.
But there's so many good dudes that have, like, so much passion for this. Because let me tell you something, automotive is not the place you go to get rich, ever.
No.
But it is the place you go.
How many times have we had that conversation?
I know. It's brutal.
Over the last 10 years.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like, I think that, you know, just finding the real ones throughout the sport as you go. You know, I've made some lifelong friends here. You know, you, I consider one of them.
Yeah.
And you know, when those friends kind of get the nod to do something very cool.
Yeah.
It's like, it's fun because you kind of feel like you're, one, living through them,
yeah,
but also because you're like, man, like they're helping push the sport forward.
Yeah.
You know, Walter is an interesting component to this.
Well, and I'll tell you kind of how it happened. It's when I took a step back from drifting for a few years, I was actively participating and shooting and trying to educate myself and train myself. I just had my daughter. I bought a gun to protect my family. And I set up a pop can about 10 feet from me and couldn't hit it. And I go, oh, this isn't good. How am I can't protect my family if I can't shoot a pop can at 5-10 feet or whatever. So I, on my own, you know, all ego aside, I went out and got trained. I wanted to be the best I could be at shooting and be safe about it. So I spent all this time. I put in the work. I put in the money. I did everything to get good with a gun. And that time that I spent off from drifting, I got really good at it. and met some people from the industry, and we started building this new car. And you know, I wasn't really looking to do this, all of this.
Yeah.
It was kind of just like, I want to have another drift car.
Yeah.
And I thought, who better to, you know, be the advocate for firearms in the motorsport space than somebody who actually shoots, participates in competitions that, you know, who better?
Yeah.
And so I got to work, and I met with Chris from Walther, and was the, I mean, just the best dude. I wish he was here, and I wish you guys could spend time with him.
But, you know, and that's got to be, you know what, maybe one day we'll have the opportunity maybe to even go down to Walther.
Yeah, we'll do a factory tour.
Man, I would love to go down there, and I think it'd be interesting to hear from their side kind of how they feel about kind of the, you know, kind of immersion into automotive as well.
And like you said, this is the second year, so it wasn't like it was, you know, some companies from these other industries come in for 1 year and then they bounce. We've seen this happen over and over again.
But those companies actively pursue automotive for a chance to be part of what they think is something they could take hold of, stake a claim in it.
Yeah.
And this was different.
Yeah, this was. And, you know, this was a cold call. I called this guy's cell phone, and we had a 20-minute phone call. And by the end of the phone call, there was a Walther deal.
Yeah.
Like,
this doesn't happen.
I remember exactly where I was sitting on the side of the road when the conversation happened. And I got to play it cool, like, yeah, of course, you know, it's great.
Yeah,
but this, like, not, I mean, I was, like, ecstatic.
Freaking out,
like,
yeah.
How I made this work is crazy. And then, you know, always remembering to never get stagnant. Put in the work every day. Like, I'm trying to do something to make them proud, to make them feel like their investment is worthwhile.
Right.
And, you know, and keep growing.
Yeah.
The whole team there, I mean, everybody backs what we do. The other prominent people within the firearms space, especially in the training space, like Scott Jelinski, Hunter Constantine. These are huge guys that train thousands of people, train them well, backing us and wanting to be involved. And like, how can we get in the car?
Yeah.
What can we do together?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, and then same thing on the car side, the automotive side.
Yeah.
People accepting it. Everybody kind of coming together was unexpected.
Yep.
I thought there would be some weird pushback, and not weird. People have their own views, and that's fine. I thought there'd be pushback, and it's been nothing but positive. And
have you had, and you know, because I think that the subject of having a firearm company on board, I think right now, especially right now, it can be not that it is, it can be a controversial topic. Have you had any pushback at all?
Just from Grid Life.
Okay,
that's it.
That's interesting.
Well, and I thought there would be a ton. I thought that there would be a lot, and we all talked about that before we announced it. And I would say that the Grid Life thing is probably the only.
But you know, just in defense of Grid Life, because
I know you're not,
but I want to make sure that we state that clearly, right?
Yeah.
Just in defense of Grid Life, like
I still they go to have, Grid Life.
No, right. Yeah. And just in defense of Grid Life, you know, like they have their own brand with their own set of values and their own set of things, and they obviously have every right to feel that way. And in addition to that, I also think that they have made an incredible stride as somebody that takes their own family to a Grid Life event. Right? I do that.
Yeah.
They have made their own stride to really make it a family-oriented, wholesome event. And it is.
It's fantastic.
So I can understand.
Yeah.
But...
Well, and to be fair, just to give them some credit, what it was the Walther wanted to be a vendor.
Got it.
And they didn't want them to be a vendor.
Okay.
And it's not like they said, Caleb, you can't come to Grid
Life. Right.
It wasn't
of course,
like that.
Of course,
I will still be at Grid Life South Carolina, Grid Life Midwest at Gingerman, and Road America.
Right.
So come see us.
Yeah. it's good. And it's nice to see that there you haven't experienced that pushback or anything like that.
Yeah.
Because that is like, that would be hard to take when you have a lot of people in the pot that, you know, some of these people that you've been partners with for a long time might be like, nah, we're out.
I thought that would happen.
Yeah.
I thought that it might be a couple of my partners that say, hey, we don't want to be associated with that. We're going to take a step back. Good
right.
luck, though.
Right.
That didn't happen. So that's awesome. And then the other thing was, you know, I would hate for there to be too much, like, we're doing our very best to promote and educate the masses, right?
Right.
I want... If there's somebody in the automotive space that is we call it gun curious. You know, they're thinking about,
like that.
They're thinking about getting their first
yeah.
gun.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. They buy their first gun. They throw it in their purse or they throw it in their center console.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they never shoot it. That's a dangerous person with a gun.
I agree. I agree.
So we yeah. advocate for training. Training, training, training. And I push that all the time. That's why I do upload videos of me shooting, because I think that it's important for, you know, a kid might watch that and go, hey, I'm going to go to my local range and I'm going to try that drill, you yep. know, and he does really bad at it. So then he goes to the range more and more. And it's that snowball effect of wanting to get better and,
yeah.
and be the best version of you you can be. It's like,
yeah.
you don't go to the track to, you know, you don't buy a drift car and then never drift,
yeah.
right? You buy right. the drift car and you go practice. That's your training.
Right.
You want to get better.
Yeah.
And same thing with a gun.
I think it's interesting to me, too, that you – so for years I've said to people – I don't know if I've said it to you, but I know I said it to plenty of other drifters, pro – you know, a lot of other drivers that were running programs and they're wow. looking for, you know, different involvement from other companies. Like, hey, like, listen, automotive is a great place to get your parts sponsors to cover some of your costs. But, like, if you're looking for a title – if you're looking for like somebody that's going to be coming in, that's going to really have a major impact in your program, look for a non-endemic sponsor, right?
Right.
So I've said that before to plenty of people.
You said it to me.
Yeah.
The last 10 years.
Which is crazy. But then what's interesting is like you're like you not – and again, I don't think that advice – I don't think that came from me. But what I mean is like it's interesting to watch that happen when you can take two major passions – and blur them together
yeah.
and then bring those people on board with this and really make that non-endemic sponsor shine.
Yeah. You
yeah.
know, I'm all for the people that have, you know, family backing that help them go racing, right? We see that all the time. There's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
If you've got it, that's fantastic.
And people that are privately funded. There's plenty of guys out there working their ass off.
Yeah, they've got a construction company and they're going racing.
Yep.
Or you've just got, you know, some family – because drifting's kind of a younger sport, right? You have a lot
although
of
it's trending older now. There, like
is,
I will
but
say,
there
yeah,
a lot of younger kids who
yes.
obviously
yes.
can't afford a $250,000 program.
And there's a lot of old people that can't afford it. Yeah, I happen to be one of them.
So, and the way I look at it is like my whole thing always has been: I want to figure out how to make this work in a way that it's self-sustaining outside of Formula Drift. Because I've always been told that you can't do it. You got to go drive FD.
Yep.
That's been everybody's yep. thing. If you want to make a living drifting, you got to go to FD, and that's where the money's made. We all know that's
yeah,
maybe 5% of the drivers in FD. But, you know, I've almost made it like a goal of mine. Like, I love dealing with partners. I love negotiating contracts. I love building the program.
Yep.
And I know for a lot of folks, that takes away from drifting for them. They don't want that.
Okay.
And they're very, you know, grassroots. They think grassroots. They think no responsibility, you know, freedom of going to the track and partying.
And there's something to that.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
But for me, I like building the program. I
yeah.
like learning and making mistakes and try, you know, and doing these things that in a way that it can maybe be a, you know, a steady career, you
right.
know. It seems it's a stretch.
Do you think that there's, I mean, like obviously, like going back to your earlier days for people that maybe don't know you explicitly, like
yeah.
there's, you know, you were a pro
BMX rider,
right? And you came from the kind of the BMX industry and stuff
yeah.
like that. And then you kind of got into cars, but in that whole process, you had found YouTube and you had uh-huh. had a YouTube thing and then you left YouTube.
That was like a real career. Like,
no, that's what you did. Yeah.
And that's crazy. Like that paid the bills.
Yeah.
That's how I went drifting before.
Right.
And then it stopped.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But so, but instead of just sitting around going, ah, the hell with it, you know, you kind of have this incredible way of adapting, which is something I super respect.
Yeah, I appreciate
something, you know, the it was never about the hard work. And in addition to that, it was like, all right, well, this didn't work out. Let me try something this
yeah.
way. And like you basically became a professional videographer.
Yeah.
Right. And you're using that skill even today while you're doing this stuff
yeah.
to not only deliver for your sponsors, but also to work with some of these companies to do some of their videography
yeah,
work.
Yeah, separately. I mean, for instance, Kenda Tire is a partner of ours and it goes further than that. Like Scott's saying, I edit all of their Formula Drift content.
Yeah.
So if you've ever seen a Kenda reel on Instagram
right.
from an FD round, I made that.
And you did some Pro Stop stuff for a while.
I did a ton of stuff for Power Stop.
Yep.
And they're a partner of ours too. So I actually worked for Power Stop before they were a partner, right?
Yeah.
And it's helped a ton. And I get to work with Red Bull came down track. Yeah, I mean, it's always about pivoting, right? Like, if you stop, if you just give up.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's not even acceptable. Like, that's not even – I would never even consider just giving up. Maybe I take a step back from drifting, but it was never to – just give up, right? I was pivoting. I had to do something else.
I know. And I know that a lot of your pivots were out of necessity, but I also think that that's what makes people fighters.
But I always pivoted in a way and into a thing that I loved, right? I love making videos.
Yeah.
I've never done anything that I didn't want to do in life.
Yeah.
Like, I rode BMX bikes when I was 5 years old, made a living doing it.
Right.
Right? And I was a team manager. I did all these things inside the BMX industry, but I found a way to make a living. Cars. I got into drifting. I go, okay, I'm poor. I can't afford this.
Right.
Call Koenig.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I need wheels.
Yeah. We did that.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's like, but I always feel like I've done a pretty dang good job at delivering or sometimes over delivering. You know, and keeping my promise and doing my best. You know, doing my best. That doesn't mean I always doing a great job.
I understand.
Doing my best.
Yeah.
To create long-term relationships, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I remember, when, you know, I talked to you about a job. Like,
yeah.
Outside of drifting, you know? Like, trying to still be involved and always just find a way to be involved in an industry or a discipline that I enjoy.
Yeah. No, listen, it's a great takeaway. And I like, what you call it, just even to wrap this whole podcast thing up, I think it's a good ending point. Because I think that, like, if more people use kind of, like, instead of trying, you know, because I've seen a lot of, listen, from a sponsor type of position, I think I've seen a lot of people pursue the things. They have this checklist. They have this thing that they want to cross off their list. They have this, I want to get this parts for free. I want to do this stuff for free. But like, if they would just slow down and say, well, what do I really like? Like, what really makes sense for me? What really, and like, you know, and they play a game that allows them to do something that they love for a long time. I think that there'll be a lot more success. You know what I mean? Because right now there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, there is no that loyalty. They'll go from company to company to company to company to company. And I first off, I don't think those people are good ambassadors for those companies.
No.
Because they're only using it because they got it for free. And I don't like that. Why we're choosy about who we pick.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I think we're at a time too, and this is not in regard to Koenig, but we're seeing a lot of companies be kind of do the same thing to the driver.
Yeah.
We're seeing that now.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
We're starting to see, I don't want to say seeing them get screwed over, but not like the company's not delivering, but the driver is.
Right.
Right. It goes both ways, and it's all about that relationship. I mean, like, I only work with companies where I have a good relationship with, you know, the owner or the president or the marketing guy or whatever. Like, if the relationship's not there, if I can't see myself hanging out with the guy that I'm doing business with, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's hard. And I think it would go the same way. Like,
yeah.
If you didn't really, like, get along with me, you're like, I can't give a part of my budget to this guy, you know?
Well, but it's not that. Like, you know, we have to, like, with a sponsor position, like, we have to work with people, and the people that we work with, we work closely with them, right?
Yeah.
So why would you ever put yourself in a position where you're working with somebody you don't like?
That's exactly it.
You wouldn't.
It's like a hiring process.
Well, like, we're not, we may be, like, you know, we're a company, we're not an institution, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a good thing. But I think, man, like, just watching kind of the things you've done and kind of what they're going to see with this, you know, two-car program.
Yeah.
And I like how off the cuff it is. And what I mean by that is not that it's random. I mean that it's to see these types of programs exist and build and go in different directions than the obvious choices, I think are exciting because they push what potentially could happen for other people in the future.
Yeah. Okay. I will say that it's always been my goal to, like, it sounds corny, but I want to show people that this shit is doable.
Yeah.
Like, you can do this and you've got to work really hard and go broke and then it comes back. It always comes back. But it's really difficult, but it can be done. And, like, you know, Jackson, for instance, you know, like, I threw him into a world that he's never been in. He's never been sponsored by somebody before.
Yeah.
And I'm having to coach him and almost, like, give him the opportunity to not make the same mistakes that I made.
Yeah.
You know, because we all start somewhere with nothing, and you're just kind of trying to navigate yourself. And so I can kind of coach Jackson and help him learn. And one day, if this two-car team ever kind of dissolves and he goes on his own way, I hope
he can have it. He might be able to have his own program if he wanted to.
Yeah, that is, you know, he can have his own program and have relationships with people like Scott and, you know, our friends over at Kenda. And I want to see him be flourished. I want to see my friends do good.
Yeah, and it's nice because to me that means that there is the industry constantly has momentum coming up behind it. And that's what allows us to keep doing the things we do, you know?
Yeah.
So
I can't believe the situation I'm in. It's crazy. I mean, I have a supportive wife.
Yeah.
I've got a cool daughter.
Which is everything. You have a crazy cool daughter.
I have a crazy cool daughter. I have my Uncle Mo who's just behind the camera.
Yeah, I know. And we hear all the stories of, you know, all the things that he's helping you out with in the background.
If it wasn't for Uncle Mo, if you watch my YouTube or follow me on Instagram, you've seen
it. Yeah. That's it. All right.